Oh, okay. I know how to do it.
All right, we're going to continue on page 7. It relieved me somewhat to learn that in alcoholics, the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating liquor, though it often remains strong in other respects. My incredible behavior in the face of a desperate desire to stop was explained. Understanding myself now, I fared forth in high hope. For 3 or 4 months, the goose hung high. I went to town regularly and even made a little money. Surely this was the answer, self-knowledge. But it was not, for the frightful day came when I drank once more. The curve of my declining morale and bodily health fell off like a ski jump. After a time, I returned to the hospital. This was the finish, the curtain, it seemed to me. My weary and despairing wife was a form that would all end with heart failure during delirium tremens, or I would develop a wet brain, perhaps within a year. She would soon have to give me over to the undertaker or the asylum.
All right, self-will, self-knowledge. I've lived on that my entire life. I've been on my own since I was 15. I put myself through college. I can do anything. I could not stop drinking. Even in college, I was already drinking and partying alcoholically, but I would get up and go to class. And I graduated on Dean's List because I had to show everybody that I could do it. I could still party, I could still stay out all night, you know, as long as I brush my teeth before I go to class, you know, I could show everybody that I could do this. The one thing I could not do was stop drinking. But like I said, I didn't know that I had a disease. When I came in here and started reading with my sponsor and started hearing about this allergy, I thought it was a bunch of crap. I thought like it was a cushion, an excuse, like an allergy, really? Like, but then once we keep reading and the obsession, I'm like, I've got this stuff, you know. I stopped drinking when I was pregnant, so clearly I'm not an alcoholic, you know. I know that drinking is dangerous for a child, so if I can stop drinking when I'm pregnant, you know, then clearly I can't be an alcoholic. But after my second child was born, I could not stop drinking. Like I said, I didn't want to go to the liquor store every single day, but it was out of my control by then. I was in, you know, the full grips of alcoholism. Still to this day, I have to turn it over to God because I want to think my way through it. Thinking's dangerous for me because I'm still fairly new, you know, and I'm learning how to live sober. And so I let you guys help and guide me. I don't know. I just, the self-knowledge, the more time I get sober, the more I realize that I don't know, and it's not about me, and it's not about what I think I can do. It's about God, and the more I turn it over to God, he's way better at doing this than I am. Because I make poor decisions, and I go to the liquor store, and I drink, and I pass out, and I don't take care of my kids. And all the knowledge in the world cannot stop me from doing that. But working these steps and being a part of AA and trusting God, I'm able to be sober today. This is the longest that I've been sober since I was 13 years old, you know, and that's not me, you know. I can think my way, I can act my way out of a lot of things, but figuring out how to be sober, I can't do that. You know, that's what I learned in AA. That's all I got.
Thanks for sharing, Stephanie. All right, well, this happened to me. I don't know, I wasn't placed in a nationally known hospital because that's what they're talking about here. Bill Wayne, you know, he got to hang out with Silkworth. And the same thing happened to me. I got my parents, you know, I really meant business when I was getting sober this time. So my parents sent me to Edge Hill, and I went there. And they taught me a lot about the allergy. They really did. they cranked that right into me. You know what? I take a drink, I'm going to take 100 more. And I was like, yeah, that happens. Yeah, I gotcha. And, you know, it says here, it relieved my somewhat to learn that in alcoholics, the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating liquor. I, too, learned this when I was in a treatment facility. I, too. And then, and I got all this self-knowledge, and we watched The Secret, and that was a great movie, and I thought that was going to fix it, you know, just got to think positive, you know, think positive, and go to a lot of meetings, and that's going to fix it, because I know now that I suffer from alcoholism, got all self-knowledge in the world, and I come out of there, and I start going to meetings, and going to meetings, and going to meetings, and all of a sudden, one day, I'm on my way to go to the bar because that did not do nothing for me because I don't, you know, I went to treatment because my external problems were quite large. I didn't go there because of my internal problems. I went there because of my external. And I figured that that would help with my external problems. And, I mean, separation from alcohol, you know, that's great. It's good. I'm not wasting all my money, you know. I can show up to court, you know, whatever. It's wonderful. But it was doing nothing for the internal sickness I suffered from. And that's where the obsession comes from. I don't always understand. You know, I listen to people that say all the time, you know, I came to AA and I just went to meetings and I just went to meetings. And I'm always like, how did you do that? Because when I just went to meetings, I was dying inside. I just wanted to kill everyone in the room. And I wanted to just take a drink. And I was, you know, that's what we're starting to talk about, you know. What are we talking about here? The obsession. What is it? You know, what does that look like? I don't know. Silkworth says irritable, restless, discontent. What does it look like for me? I mean, I never have had any of depression, boredom, irritable, restless. We can add those in there. Nowhere I'm going. Don't have any clue where I'm going in life. Always thinking, you know, oh, I should be doing way better than I am. And it just sucks to be sober. And like, I don't understand that. When people tell me in meetings, just don't drink. Like, do we suffer from the same illness? Because that's not an option for me. That's what, you know, that was pretty much what I got out of rehab was just don't drink. And I left there. I spent $2,800 to learn not to drink. Yay. And I left there just as sick as ever. And I went to as many meetings as I could. And then I come here and I think you guys are going to give me the magical answer. And then you tell me, just don't drink. And I'm like, wow, I am so screwed. And I almost went out and drank again. And so, you know, when I hear this, like, Silkworth told him what he knew. He doesn't know about, you know, a spiritual remedy. He knows about an allergy. He doesn't know how to fix that. He knows, stay away from alcohol. It's all they can tell you. But luckily, you know, I met some people in these rooms that knew a little more, and I think we might get to that, or maybe I'll give a little hope shot at the end. Thanks.
Thank you. All right, we're going to go over to page 24. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice and drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. The almost certain consequences that follow, taking even a glass of beer, do not crowd into the mind to deter us. If these thoughts occur, they are hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. There is a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove.
All right. I'm not so far away from that last drink that, I'm a little bit away from it, but it was horrible. I haven't been around AA a whole bunch. There towards the end, I wanted to die. I have two beautiful boys, and I wanted to die. I don't have all the trouble and things that a lot of people have. I had lost my job that I'd been at for 7 years because I was, at the end, drinking in the morning because I had to stop the shakes, and then I was drinking at lunchtime because I had gone 5 hours without a drink. But that's what I had to do. I detoxed. I called my sister for help, and I detoxed at the hospital because at about 11 hours without a drink, I was about to start seizing because I had just been actually killing myself. My fingers and toes were numb. I was about 35 pounds lighter. I could barely keep a yogurt down. I had no stomach lining. It took about 4 months before I could actually, like, eat and keep food down because apparently whiskey and vodka every single day for 25 years is just not healthy. And, I mean, I was very, very, very sick. And I came in here and I got a sponsor and I started doing what was suggested. And I was told the obsession would go away. I thought, I'm different. Clearly, you beautiful people who have no desire to drink couldn't have it like I have it. I was going to 3 and 4 meetings a day because I'm, you know, holding onto the chair. Don't let me go to the liquor store. I have always drank and always had the obsession, so it was absolutely just impossible for me to imagine not having that obsession. It seemed impossible, but my sponsor was like, you work these steps, you go through this book, you do what's suggested, and it'll be relieved. And I didn't believe it, honestly. I mean, when all I can think about is drinking, I don't know how to not drink, you know? But I didn't want to die. Like I said, I have 2 boys that need me, and so I was willing to take some suggestions. And I went 32 or 34 days without a drink. And I couldn't... it wasn't gone. It was not gone quick enough. I still wanted to drink. I was still thinking about drinking. I'm going to your meetings. I'm reading this book. I'm calling other alcoholics. I was like, I can't not drink. And I didn't know God was already working. I didn't really have a God yet. You know, I came in here with no God at all. But he, you know, he was already working, and I went to the liquor store. And another thing my sponsor says, a head full of AA will mess up your drinking. And I went and I got my fifth of vodka. My fifth of vodka should last 24 hours. I have this down to a T. I know I need to keep this much to get me through in the morning till the liquor store opens at 10 o'clock. You know, if I can have more, that's awesome. But this much, if I ration my shots in the morning, will get me through until 10 o'clock for the liquor store to open. This is the obsession. I have no idea this is what's going on. So I go to the liquor store and I get my fifth of vodka, and I can't wait 5 minutes till I get home because I've gone 32 days without a drink. And I'm drinking in the car, and I get home and I am back in my walk-in closet, which is where I hide my liquor and where I can drink in the dark. And I'm drinking and I can't get enough. I'm drinking, you know, and I it's straight vodka, but I can't, it's, you know, I'm just like, it's not working. And then I'm just like, okay, what is going on? And I got AA chatter up here. You know, it's getting worse. Your disease is a progressive disease. And I'm like, no, I just need to drink more. And in 2 hours, I'm down to where I need to be in the morning. It didn't, that bottle, in 2 hours, I have almost gone through a fifth. And I'm like, oh my God, it's a progressive disease. I should... my body, I should not, but with a head full of AA, so I go back to the liquor store. I might as well go ahead and buy a half gallon now because it's a progressive disease, and a half gallon, now I can fill up my fifth again just so I'm rational. You know, well, that turned into 10 days of drinking nonstop, and I was quickly back to where I was when I came in the first time when I walked in these rooms. The last 3 days are a blackout. I drove over to Newport News in a blackout. I left my kids again. And I remember coming in and out of the blackout in very bad situations that I should not be putting myself in. and grabbing my vodka, and it was not working. My vodka was usually in a water bottle like this when I'm traveling, because I travel safe. And it was not working. And I remembered what you guys were telling me, you know, when it stops working. I was at that point. I couldn't get drunk. And I know that if I would have blown, I was clearly drunk. I had, you know, been drinking for 10 days nonstop. But it wasn't working anymore. And I was screwed. I was completely screwed. What do you do when the only thing that you know that is going to bring you ease and comfort doesn't work anymore? You know, and I had thrown in some Southern Comfort, some whiskey, thinking it was the vodka that wasn't working. It was the alcohol that wasn't working anymore. And I wanted my sponsor. I wanted my sponsor. And I remember driving home, and I called her, and she said to take a shower, get cleaned up. And I went over to her house, and she sat with me for hours that day. And I felt disgusting. I felt dirty. I felt nasty. I remember I told her, I said, I guess something's happening in here. I don't know what it is. It's just, she said, is it guilt? Is it shame? And what had happened was, just 30 days in these rooms, I had started getting a conscience. And that's something, I had always drank, and that conscience was gone. And so when I think about a drink, that was my sobriety date. I think about those 10 days. That alcohol doesn't work anymore. I might think, you know, I'm having a bad day or I'm sad or whatever, and I want to go drink. I think about those last 10 days. It didn't work anymore. I wanted to die again. I was willing to drive my car off the road, not worry about my kids, you know. It's not going to work anymore. It's not going to work anymore. So I dive into this book, you know, and luckily working these steps, and the obsession's been lifted. It did not happen in 30 days. It did not happen in 60 days. It was probably closer to a year, you know. But the thoughts of drinking, because it was constant. I was like, you guys, it went away. It went away for you guys. What's wrong with me? Why isn't it going away? I'm working these steps, you know. But I just had to be patient. And, you know, I guess God was teaching me some patience. And the gaps in between, you know, instead of it being every hour or every day, it would be 2 days or maybe 3 days. And then I remember my sponsor goes, you haven't wanted to drink in 10 days. And I'm like, yes, 10 days. You know, that's amazing for someone like me, you know. And so I just think back to those last 10 days that I went out there. It's not going to work anymore. It's going to get worse. It's going to get worse if I pick up another drink. So that's all I have.
Thanks for sharing, Stephanie. Thank God for the architects of the big book that wrote this paragraph in italics. Thank God, because it's just one more thing that I heard in meetings. If I don't remember my last drunk, then I'm going to do it again. But so if your last drunk was a blackout, I'm sorry. With that idea, you're screwed. And then, you know, it tells me here, it says that I can't bring in with sufficient force the memory the suffering of even a week or a month ago. And that, when I read that, that really made a lot of sense. Ain't no one ever told me that before. And that makes that explains a lot of things that I just cannot explain. Why is it that I do? I'm not going to tell you a bunch of war stories of the horrific things that I've done, but trust me, I've done some horrific things. And I've felt that way in the morning where I can never let this happen again, to find myself drinking less than a week later. And when I go to drink, I don't even think, just where it says here, they don't even crowd into my mind about, hey, you know, you did just try to throw your girlfriend out of a moving car. She was driving. Like, that, I don't think about that. It's time to drink. And, you know, and supplement it with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. And, God, I remember being down in Orlando with my daughter's mother. And it would be Friday night, and we had a babysitter, and we were going to go out, and she would always ask me the same thing. She'd say, you think you can handle yourself tonight? Think nothing crazy has to happen? And I, you know, we'd be dressed up, and we're going to go out, go to some clubs. I'd be like, no problem. I got you. It'll be good tonight. It's going to be different. I'm going to do nothing stupid. I'm going to control myself, and it would always be the same thing. I somehow got the car lost, got in a fight with someone. People are running to get me cocaine because it'll make me sober up a little bit, and I won't be acting like such a complete ass. I'm covered in Jameson. My white shirt looks like... we're not going to talk about what it looks like, but... this is what happens, and it always starts out with the same thing, the same idea that it's going to be different. And you know, how many times have I sat in meetings and they tell me to play back that tape, and I wasn't born with the tape. My tape machine's broke, my VCR don't work, I don't know. When it's time to drink, and I don't think about those things. For me, I'm going to say this too, alcohol never stopped working for me. It's always been a viable option, and it's still a viable option today. If I don't want to stay doing this spiritual stuff, and I get off track, and I get all jacked up, alcohol will work. It will give me a feeling. It will make me feel better. I'm not going to tell you that all the consequences aren't going to happen, and that my whole life's not going to go right down the tubes again, but for a moment, it will give me a little bit of relief. And I have to remember that, because if alcohol just stopped working for me, then I don't need to be here. I don't have to come here anymore. But it does. It works. It works wonderfully. Because I suffer from an illness that demands treatment. It's either going to be treated by alcohol or it's going to be treated by God. And that's my truth. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Patrick.
All right, this is our last reading for... Oh, no, we've got some more. Page 34. For those who are unable to drink moderately, the question is how to stop altogether. We are assuming, of course, that the reader desires to stop. Whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he has already lost the power to choose whether he will drink or not. Many of us felt that we had plenty of character. There was a tremendous urge to cease forever, yet we found it impossible. This is the baffling feature of alcoholism as we know it. This utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. How then shall we help our readers determine to their own satisfaction whether or not they are one of us? The experiment of quitting for a period of time will be helpful, but we think we can render an even greater service to alcoholic sufferers and perhaps to the medical fraternity. So we shall describe some of the mental states that precede a relapse into drinking, for obviously this is the crux of the problem. What sort of thinking dominates an alcoholic who repeats time after time the desperate experiment of the first drink? Friends who have reasoned with him after a spree, which has brought him to the point of divorce or bankruptcy, are mystified when he walks directly into a saloon. Why does he? Of what is he thinking?
Okay. So when I got here, I had no desire to stop drinking. Absolutely none. The thought of not drinking, that didn't even cross my mind. Once I detoxed and I got here, I wanted you guys to teach me how to drink 3 or 4 days a week. That was my goal when I walked in here. I had a whole lot of plans. I also wanted you guys... So I was a blackout drinker, and there towards the end, I was, I keep a journal, and I have like a nice hemp journal, because I'm a hippie, and you know, and it's a beautiful, happy journal, but let me tell you, the last 6 years were a journal called My Blue Book, because I was miserable. I was absolutely miserable, and, I didn't want to stop drinking. I needed to not go to the liquor store every single day. If we could cut it back to Thursday to Sunday, that would be perfect. If you guys could show me how to drink so that I didn't get angry and scream about the dishes and scream at my children and be angry that they have homework or that I have to do paperwork, you know. I just wanted you guys to teach me how to be the happy drunk that I was at 17 years old again. And I also wanted you to teach me how to not black out, because that was a problem. My blue book that was my journal turned into, at I would write in it at the end of the night, and in the morning I would read it because I can't remember because I was blacking out every night. So I need to drink less than a fifth. I want you guys to teach me how to do that. So when I come in here and you say you don't ever have to drink again, but I wanted to drink. You guys weren't understanding here. I didn't want to stop drinking. I just need to drink 4 days a week. That don't drink, you won't get drunk. It still bothers me. I don't know how to not drink. That's what I do. Fish swim, I drink. You know, I really had no desire to stop drinking. People would say they've got years and years of sobriety. I didn't think it was true. One of my very first meetings, the girl was sharing she had 8 months, and I remember what was going through my head is, you people are looking and acting like you believe her, that she's not pregnant. Why would anybody go 8 months without a drink? I mean, that's what I came in here with. Like, 8 months, that's just absolutely insane, unless you're pregnant, you know? So I didn't have a desire to stop drinking. But once I started working these steps and realized that I have the allergy and the obsession and that I can't drink. If I take one sip, if it hits my lips, I've lost control. I've lost control. It's out of my hands at that point. But I don't know that when I walk in here, you know. Like I said, I didn't know that I had an allergy or an obsession, you know. But in working these steps and reading this, that obsession can be lifted. That's all I have on that.
Thanks. All right. How then shall we help our readers to determine to their own satisfaction whether they're one of us? Well, I mean, we're going to start reading again at like the end of Fred's story, but there's Jim's story, there's the Jaywalker, and there's Fred's story. And, I mean, I love Jim's story. And it starts to, you know, through his story, I start to see some inconsistencies and some things, you know. It tells me about how he made a beginning. Sound to me like Jim went to a lot of meetings, and but he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. And so then, you know, Jim winds up drunk. Fred winds up drunk. The Jaywalker's back's broken. We all know the deal. And but, you know, that's like my favorite sentence. And I've always, like, me and Ryan, I've always said that to her. You know, for obviously, this is the crux of the problem. What is it? And, you know, I've gone back and forth with people about the allergy, and I understand that it separates me, makes me a distinct entity, but, like, if I don't ever take that first drink, I don't have nothing to worry about. I'm going to be all right. Well, except that I'm crazy, irritable, restless, and discontent, and have no direction, but other than that, I'm going to be okay. No, like, that obsession, that is the crux. Why do I always get driven back to that first drink? Why do I do it? Why, when all these horrendous things have happened, why, when everybody, you know, graduated high school, went to college, did something with their lives, built up a strong future and have stayed with it, had kids, why do I keep doing this? You know, and there's been plenty of times where I thought, you know, I just got to pick myself up from my bootstraps. I'm going to get out of my 20s, and I'm going to get into my 30s, and I'm going to be a successful person. I'm going to stop acting like a child. And, like, I don't know, I got sober when I was 28, but I realized that that wasn't going to happen. It wasn't. There's something here that's just so powerful that I have just this obsession that I always am going to drink no matter what. And that's, you know, that's what happened to me in the end. I finally realized it right down the street in Norfolk General in the neuro ICU. I came to the realization that this was as good as my life was going to get as I'm laying there in this bed. Like, this is it. It finally hit me that, like, no matter how hard I try, no matter how many times I tell myself I'm going to community college, this, at this point in my life, this is as good as it's going to get. It's a downward spiral from here. And that left me, you know, that left me pretty bad spot. You know, what sort of thinking dominates an alcoholic who repeats time after time the desperate experiment of the first drink? I don't know. I really don't. I don't get it, you know? I don't know why other people aren't driven to drink every day. I don't understand why other people, when they have the flu, they just go home. When I'm driving by AJ Gators and I have running the temperature and I just want to be in bed and I stop and get a drink. Why do I do that? I don't know. I don't. I'm beyond human aid. I'm screwed. And that's the state I came here looking for answers. And you know, I got the allergy. I understand. But how can you guys help me get rid of this obsession that just eats my breakfast every day, that just drives me to drink when it's such the unopportune time? That's why I love where it says, you know, that's a great sentence, the utter inability to leave it alone no matter how great the necessity or the wish. And there's been a lot of times where there was a lot of necessity and a lot of wishes for me not to take that drink. Don't do it. I have to be at probation in the morning. If I smell like alcohol, I'm going to get freaking violated. I have a warrant in another state. I'm going to be screwed. And what do? I get wasted the night before. And I go in there reeking of booze. And I have to just scramble on my feet, make up a good lie. Oh, I dropped a box of alcohol at work, you know? And I spilled all over me, and I'm still wearing the same clothes, and she actually bought it. Freaking idiot. But, like, why? Why do I do these things? And that's that obsession. Like, dude, there's not enough meetings in the world that is going to make that obsession go away for a true alcoholic. There's not. I had to find that out the hard way. And that's all I got on that. Thank you. Thanks.
We've got about 10 more minutes. That was our last reading.
I thought there was one more.
No.
Oh.
But you can read one if you like.
Really? All right. The email I got had these two things. Whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this plain insanity. How could such a lack of proportion of the ability to think straight be called anything else? And that's when they're talking about, like, Jim mixing alcohol with milk. And, like, that's why I love Jim's story. Because, like, you know, Jim, he was good for a while. He didn't even start drinking until he was, like, 35. And then he started in a few years, he became so violent, I don't know, I just picture him in bars starting fights, just being crazy. And like he had a good wife, he had a good war record, he owned an automobile agency. Like he's a decent dude. And then, you know, he crosses that line. Doesn't talk about him like inheriting his alcoholism. Just something happened, he crossed the line. And he starts getting wasted. And then he goes to an asylum, and he meets these cats. And these cats, you know, they tell him everything they know about alcoholism, and he makes a beginning. And but he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. What does that mean? I don't know. Not going through with their 6-step, 12-step, whatever they did back there, not going through with the process, maybe not making amends, not writing inventory, not doing what we do here to make that obsession go away. And then one day it hits him, you know? And, like, he had words with the boss. I can only imagine what he said. It says here that it was nothing serious, but the boss happens to own his own company, so I imagine it was a little bit serious. I'd be pretty pissed if I had to go work at a company that I used to own. And then, you know, drives into the country. I understand that. I just want to get away. Just get away. Drive out there. Stop somewhere, sell someone an automobile at this place. Been there many a times, doesn't even think about drinking. Goes in there, eats some food, and then I love that right there. That's the biggest thing. Suddenly. That, like, explains the obsession, I think, so wonderfully. Suddenly. It's not like, you know, I have to put a lot of thought into this. It has to follow me around for weeks. Suddenly. That's how powerful of what I'm dealing with is that it just seems like a good idea to mix some whiskey with milk. And he does that, and then it's one more trip to the asylum, back at it again. I don't know, you want to share on that?
Sure.
I
don't know. I never tried to, like, stop drinking. I mean, I drink straight whiskey or straight vodka. I don't know. It's trying to mix it. Of course, I would try to eat, but there towards the end, I couldn't eat. I had tried, I was just reading that section about all the different ways that we tried to stop. I say I didn't really try all of those, but I did try the wine. I tried different combos. I tried different sequences of mixing other stuff with the alcohol if I ate and then did this and then did, you know, because I had, I overdosed several times. Until I came to these rooms, I didn't consider them overdoses because the discharge papers didn't say that. It said, you know, that I had heavy alcohol, narcotics, barbiturates, things like that. I just got sick. It must have been food poisoning. That's what I like to tell work when I miss work because I'm hooked up to IVs because I'm poisoning myself to death. And I don't know that's what's going on. You know, it says in here about we can't differentiate the false from the real. That's what I'm living in. You know, I'm making excuses that it's food poisoning when I haven't eaten in 3 days, you know. I mean, but that sounds good to the boss, you know. I mean, this is my justification. And in my head, I'm telling myself, it was the wrong combo. It was the wrong sequence. Or it's the whiskey, I should be doing clear liquors. You know, I mean, this is the insanity that's in my head that if I just do it a little bit different, if I drink V8, V8's got vegetables, it's got vitamins in it, that will help me, you know, so that I won't drink as much vodka, so then I won't black out because that's the problem is the blacking out, you know. I have no idea that I am completely an alcoholic. I don't know what that means before I get here, you know, but there's an answer in this book, you know, that obsession can be lifted. And I'm just sitting here just completely baffled that, like, I remember you guys telling me that. And I didn't think about drinking at all today or yesterday. Earlier in the week, I may have had a thought about something, but it was quickly gone. You know what I do? I drop to my knees and I say, God, remove that thought. You know, that's what this program has transformed me into, that I don't have to drink today. And like I said, when I came in and you said you don't ever have to drink again, I didn't want that. That was not why I was here. Today I don't want to drink. I don't want to drink today. Not worried about the future. That whole never drink again where it says that you can't, total abstinence, I said to my sponsor, I said, I can't never drink again. That was another one. It was just unreal. Unreal. I could not, I'm just, oh, that's just causing me way too much anxiety. She said, let's not drink right now. I could do that. I could understand that. And I could not drink right now. Let's just not drink right now. Let's not drink today. You know, that was something that I could comprehend, you know. And so I just needed it broken down easy, you know, into baby steps so that here's me with all this self-knowledge and a college degree, think I can figure it out. Let's just not drink right now. Break it down like that. Keep it simple for me. And today I'm sober and the obsession's been lifted and I'm very grateful for that. So that's all I have.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing. There's still one more paragraph. Once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. And I don't know, that's what the reading I had says, but like, that's it. Here we go. Once more, I know we're drilling this home. You, me, I cannot stop drinking. I have no mental defense, except in a few rare cases, and I'm definitely not rare. And neither he nor any other human being can provide this defense. What do you mean? I mean, my sponsor can't get me sober? Come on now. Oh, B, probably no human power could have relieved my alcoholism. How true has that been? My defense must come from a higher power. And so, yep, for anyone new, we are tricking you. Ha ha, it's God. So we got for you, though. But how true it is. you know, from a higher power. And so what do I do? If I've been sold on what we've read, if I believe that I have this merciless obsession, what's there left to me for me to do? I can either keep drinking or I can accept spiritual help. And luckily, you know, this is the end of all the doom and gloom chapters, but it has to be that way. I have to fully understand what I'm dealing with here. And I have to understand, like, I might have recovered from alcoholism, but like I said, drinking is still on the table, and it will always be there. It's always a choice on that table. Not a choice, you know, I can get that, but it's always going to be there. And so there's things that I have to do. You know, I have to continue to take these steps. I have to incorporate 10, 11, 12 in my life. If not, the obsession will return. I'm going to drink again. And for me to drink, I probably won't die. I'll just end up in prison. Thanks.
Thank you. All right, so we've lost the power of choice. That made no sense to me. I choose to drink, is what I thought. And I look at it different now. My sponsor didn't ask a lot of me. She asked a couple of things. She said, I don't want you to put booze in the hole in your face, and don't lie to me. And I was so overwhelmed with the thought of not drinking that I could not promise her I wouldn't drink. I could promise her that I would call her before I put booze in the hole in my mouth, in my head. And I could do that. And I don't lie to her. I've never made any promise without a benefit. What am I going to get from it? And I didn't know if I was going to be able to keep that promise until today. Right now, I've been able to keep that promise. There's been alcohol in my house. I just moved, but up until a month ago, there's been alcohol, there's been booze in my house since I came in these rooms. There has always been a 12-pack of case, whatever, there. I leave meetings and I go home to it. There's been some emotional times where I've gone to the man cave and I've gone to the beer. I have grabbed the beers. Actually, about 3 months ago, I was cuddling with a case of beer on the floor in a cold garage, holding the beer, crying, praying to God that I don't take that drink. That power of choice. Is it my choice? I don't know. I don't know what to do. Call my sponsor. I can't call my sponsor. I need to drink. I got one beer. I grabbed another beer because one beer is not going to be enough. Why am I even messing with beer? Why don't I go to the liquor store? Why am I even messing with beer? If I take one sip, it's over. I have that allergy. I know AA has filled it. If I take one sip, it's over. I'm going to go back to that living hell. Am I going to make it back to the rooms? Not everybody makes it back. You know, and this is the obsession that's going, and I'm holding the beers, and I'm crying, and I'm, God, please don't let me open it. Don't let me put the one sip of Bud Light on my lips, you know. And in full-on tears, I called my sponsor, and I said, I got beer. And she said, let's talk, put the beer down. And I don't think I can put the beer down, you know. But that's, I have tools. I have tools today. I have lost the power. I don't have the choice to drink. It's God. It's in God's hands. I've been blessed with the tools to pray to God. God, please don't let me drink. You know, when I am in those situations or where I'm thinking about drinking, or I might drink and because it seems like a good idea, you know, or I'm just completely defenseless against that drink, I pray to God and He's the one who takes care of it. You know, and I pick up the phone and I call another alcoholic, you know. I drop to my knees. That's the first thing that I do, you know. But I call my sponsor, you know. But it's God. It's not my choice. It's not my sponsor. It's not the other AAs. It's God who keeps that alcohol away from me, you know. And I'm thankful that I have a God today. That's all I have.
Thank you, Stephanie. All right. This ends our sharing portion of the meeting. Come back next week and we'll be going into step two, coming to believe into that power that they were talking about tonight. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, finding outside contributions. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also excuse me, their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all people and all groups around the world. Are there any AA-related announcements? Simple actions. Do you have one? Oh, I'm sorry.
Ralph. The New Day Group is going to be open Christmas and New Year's from 5:30 a.m. to 11 p.m. 5:30 a.m. in the morning to 11 p.m. at night. There'll be a meeting every hour and a half, and another half hour before eating. There'll be plenty of food there. So you're all welcome.
Thanks, Ralph.
Any other AA-related announcements? Okay. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our group, please see one of us after the meeting. Will home group members please raise your hand? Okay. Newcomers. We'd really like to welcome you here tonight. Is there anyone that's in their first 30 days of sobriety that would like to introduce themselves by their first name?
Let me say
hey, Dana, welcome.
Dana, welcome.
Glad you're here.
My name's Julie.
Hey, Julie.
Hey, Julie, welcome.
Tonight, the literature table is set up over here next to the coffee. There are newcomer packets, so feel free to grab one of those. There's some meeting lists inside. And stick around and talk to some people after the meeting. Books have a small price to pay. They're written on the inside, and pamphlets are free. And there are a bunch of flyers up there about some conferences coming up, so take a look over there at the table. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. Okay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, we've got Jill and Lydia that'll be up here at the front next to the table. If you have any questions on sponsorship, please feel free to come up and talk to them after the meeting. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meetings are audio recorded, and our upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net, so you can go back and listen to the wonderful job that these two did tonight. And in closing, I'd like to thank both of them again. We have a big book that was left here probably 3 or 4 weeks ago. So if it belongs to you, please just come up after the meeting and see me. It was left on the back table next to the coffee after a meeting a couple weeks ago. Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the stuff discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be at Plaza del Sol. It's on 22nd and Colonial Avenue. A bunch of us go up there after the meeting and have dinner or just chips. And do I have a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164? Catherine?
Sure, yep. Hi, my name is Catherine, and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Catherine.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thanks, Catherine.
Thanks for you.
Please feel free to come up and thank the speakers tonight after we say the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Amen.